perhaps the best name in radio, the best name in this rung of show business, Morgan Hawk, is on Eavesdrop with us today. Thanks for being on the show, Morgan. Great to hear your voice.
Great to talk with you, Matt, and appreciate the introduction. It's funny because, as you know, I went to the University of Iowa, and with a last name like that, it's every class you go into, it's like if they maybe take roll or attendance or something like that, it's Hawk, that's a great name for this school. So it's a legitimate name, so I guess we can thank my parents for that.
There you go. Yeah, you live in the right state to have that last name.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I wanted to thank you off the top. I know this happens a lot, you know, in interviews towards the end, but I know Morgan for my internship with the Cedar Rapids Colonels in summer of 2013, and I'm going to be revisiting my internship with the Score in a future episode too, which was the summer before that. And those two internships, especially the one with the Colonels, Morgan, just gave me a lot of confidence moving forward in terms of, I think, performance was the biggest thing, and being able to kind of being thrown right into the action, and especially now as a teacher, and kind of the mechanics of teaching has, you know, come easier than I thought. And I think a lot of that, reflecting on it, looking back, is because of some of these opportunities like you gave me. So I wanted to thank you off the top.
Well, I appreciate that, and thank you for, you know, saying that. And, you know, obviously, you know, I think I've expressed this to you in the past too, but everything that you did while you were at the Colonels was terrific, and it was a lot of fun that summer. And, you know, I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed your time, because, you know, I think one thing that the Colonels do a really great job of is when we have interns or people that may come work for us for the summer, really try to give them the broad experience and able to learn a lot of things about the business, which I think what an internship should really be, because, as you know, you get into any work of life or any job in your life, you're going to find that, you know, you're doing a lot more things and wearing a lot more hats than what the job description may have said originally. So I think that's an important thing that you learn a lot during really every internship that you do.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And there was a lot of good baseball that summer too. The Colonels were really good, and I meant to look this up beforehand. That's my fault, but there's a lot of guys on the Twins or on other major league teams from that roster, a lot of major league graduates.
That was really, you know, when I look back at my time at the Colonels, I had, you know, more vivid memories from that season than probably any other year. And it really goes back to, well, I mean, it was great, you know, working with you, obviously, but then you had so much talent, and the team, I think if I remember right, won like 88 games, just had a terrific year. But some of those individual players, namely Byron Buxton, was just all worldly, you know, in the Midwest League that year. Through the short stint that he spent in Cedar Rapids, he was promoted mid-season. And then, you know, Max Kepler, who really, you know, during his time in Cedar Rapids, he was somewhat hampered by injury, but obviously, you know, he's made his way, you know, to the Twins, and I think blossoming into a major league star. And then there's names like Jorge Polanco, which I believe Polanco was the first of that group to reach the major leagues. And so there was just so much talent. Then you look at the players that didn't even make the major leagues that were really, really good minor league players. Adam Brett Walker, who hit a ton of home runs. And a lot of those other players, boy, you haven't mentioned Nico Goodrum, who's a major leaguer too. But then also, you know, Dalton Hicks.
Right.
You know, it was just a really fun team to watch. And up and down that lineup was, you know, every single one of them could hit the ball to the ballpark.
And what's one or two of your favorite Buxton highlights or stories?
Yeah, the one that stands out to me, and you'll remember this too, it's the walk-off grand slam. Do you remember that?
I do. I have the clip ready to go.
Okay, great. So So the funny thing is, and what I remember a lot about that was Bob Brooks.
Why is that?
Because the game was being televised on a local TV. And so when Bob would come, and I don't know how many of our listeners know the story of Bob, but obviously a legendary sportscaster, both locally in Cedar Rapids, but then University of Iowa as well. But it's he was doing a post-game interview with Buxton, and I think they either did the shaving cream pie to the face or something with water or something. It was just great to see that, you know, however old he was, you know, upper 80s, you know, Bob Brooks. Right. And so that was one of my memories from that. But the pitcher that he hit the walk-off grand slam off of was Jairo Diaz, who was a former colonel, and he was at that particular game pitching for the Burlington Bees. So that was a pretty cool night. I think that was, I mean, everybody heard about Buxton. He was a high draft pick, a big time prospect, but I really felt like that moment really solidified that this guy's for real.
And I think that was in April or May only.
I think it was. I think it was in May, and if I remember right, so it was fairly early in the year, absolutely.
All right, here's that call. Morgan Hawk with a great call, that home run. Then we get into the intro music and on with the show.
Here's the pitch to Buxton. Swinging a drive, deep left field, down the line. That ball is gone!
Welcome to Eavesdrop. Here's your host, Matt Cozy.
All right, we're back on Eavesdrop. Morgan Hawk is the guest on this episode. And I don't know if I ever asked you this. What sparked your interest initially to be a broadcaster specific to baseball or other sports?
Sure. It really started back in high school and maybe even before that. But I went to high school in Southern Iowa. So I grew up in Bloomfield, Iowa. The high school is Davis County. I started, I guess you could call my broadcasting career, doing a little bit of high school basketball for our local radio station. I did color, and that I found that I liked it. I don't know if at that point I thought I'd make a career out of it, but when I went to Iowa and in college, I really thought I would probably move into TV and maybe be a TV sports reporter. But I did the internship with KCRG TV in Cedar Rapids, enjoyed that. But then that moved into an internship with the Colonels the following summer, where I worked under John Rogers and got a ton of experience on the air doing play-by-play. That really allowed me to fall in love with broadcasting and really things went from there. When I graduated, I you know, reached out to probably hundreds of different, you know, teams or, you know, organizations, radio stations, hoping to find a play-by-play gig. Wasn't able to find anything, so I found a job in sales, you know, in Cedar Rapids. And the following fall, the job opened in Cedar Rapids, and I had that sales experience, which allowed me to get the job with the Colonels because I would also be selling for the team in the off season. So that's really kind of the how it came about. But it was just kind of starting out in high school and really found something I enjoyed.
And what types of things do you need to do, in your view, to become better at that type of job? Because I think a lot of it is just repetition.
It is. Repetition is a huge thing, and it's somewhat difficult to get repetitions, because it's, you know, it's what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Well, you've got to get experience. Well, how do you get experience?
Right.
You don't have a job, you know, so what I found is, and I know a lot of broadcasters do this, is just, you know, broadcasting games while you're sitting at home, you know, watching on TV, turn the sound down, go to a local high school, sit in the outfield and bring your recorder. So that's a big thing to get that experience. But I think listening to yourself and listening to other broadcasters, you know, you try to pick up bits and pieces from what other people are doing and try to make it your own. And I think that's a big key too.
And baseball on the radio, doing it, you know, actively for so many games, you realize there's a lot of downtime just because of the nature of the game and how the broadcast is going. It's almost like you're doing the game and then also a show at the same time. What type of mentality did you have to try to, you know, really keep a broadcast going, especially in the so-called dog days of summer where, you know, you're up to game 120 or 130, you know, the season's getting maybe a little bit long at that point.
You're absolutely right. You know, it's, and especially, you know, in baseball is so, it's such a different animal than any other sport when it comes to broadcasting. And many broadcasters around minor league baseball are doing it completely solo for 140 games, you know, out of the year. So that's a challenge too. But it's, you know, I think you really have to, because let's be honest, I mean, I'm a huge baseball fan, but when I listen to a game on the radio, I don't care about every pitch. I don't care about every out, really, in a lot of cases. So it's really finding ways to tell stories. You try to look outside the white lines, you know, what's going on in the stands, you know, what, you know, try to describe the smells or what you're seeing, and, you know, giving a little background on players is always great too. So you really dive into a lot of those different items, which is a lot different than if you're broadcasting a football game or basketball, you know, because it's so much more fast paced.
Working in minor league baseball, you do much more than radio play-by-play and being the broadcaster. What were some of those other things you did in addition to your role in the booth over the years?
Sure. Sales was a huge component of it. So that's one tip that if I get asked, you know, what's a tip or what's a way to get into the business, I try to tell people to be versatile, be willing to sell, whether it be sponsorships or tickets. That's a big key. I wouldn't have gotten the Colonel's job had I not been able to sell or had some sales experience. So that's a big key, because that also keeps you employed during the off season. And it's a way to generate income for the team. But in addition, more specific to the broadcasting side, it's handling media requests. It's writing game notes that will be used by the media. It's really being the liaison between the team and the front office. So you wear a lot of different hats. You know, you may be sitting up in the booth at 6:15 for a game at 6:30, and you may get somebody letting you know that there's a lineup change, and that completely throws off your plans. You may not be able to get on the air when you're supposed to get on the air because you need to take care of printing off new lineups and distributing those to who may need them. So you wear a lot of different hats. You have to be flexible. You have to be willing to work long hours, but at the end of the day, there's nothing like being able to call baseball games for a living, and that's pretty special and pretty neat thing to do.
One thing that struck me pretty early on, you know, working that season in minor league baseball, was that the personnel, obviously the players, we know their stories. They're ultimately trying to make it to the show, make it to the major leagues, but a lot of these other personnel are also, and one of the biggest ones for me was you know, the coaches, obviously, the managers, they would like to reach the big leagues in some capacity. The umpires was a unique one. You know, that's their job. They're a professional referee, and they want to make it big. And then the media side as well. Did you have, you know, aspirations to move up?
You know, I think you always do when you're interested in getting into baseball. You know, it's, you always have aspirations that, in, you know, and I think one thing that's unfair that a lot of broadcasters do to themselves is say, well, in 3 years, I want to be in Double A, and in 10 years, I'm going to be in the major leagues. The timeline is just so different for every single person. It's so competitive, and everybody has their own path. You ask, you know, how, you know, you ask 15 major league broadcasters, you know, what their path was, you'll probably hear 15 different stories. Now, there's so many different ways to get to the major leagues, and so much of it involves luck and timing, you know. And so I think early in my career, I probably set some unfair standards, like I wanted to, you know, continue to move up or what have you. But then you start to really realize what's important to you, and you know, I'm happy in Cedar Rapids. I met my future wife. We got married. Ended up having one child, now two, and so it's, I think your priorities change a little bit, where you're comfortable where you are, and you don't necessarily want to move and move your family. So I think early on I did, but then towards the end of my career with the Colonels, I really had no plans on moving at all.
Yeah, finding that balance and realizing what's important is important in itself, and so such a huge factor in many things. How big of a factor was that in no longer being with the Colonels? You switched careers. You could kind of give us a little story into that, but now being married and having two kids, I could imagine that was behind the career switch.
It was really the main trigger, I guess you could say, because I really enjoyed my time at the Colonels. Now my role had shifted, you know, quite a bit over the past several years, where I wasn't broadcasting every single game. We had hired, and that was, you know, my choice. We had to allow me to stay home a little more often.
Okay.
We had taken a
I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, we had purchased a team in Waterloo. You know, I was asked to take a bigger role up there, and I accepted. So that was, I was still involved with the Colonels, doing, I want to say, maybe 25 or 30 games broadcasting wise, but also doing a lot on the operations and sales side with our team in Waterloo. So we had hired a different broadcaster to do the majority of the game. So my role had shifted a little bit already, so it was a little bit of a slower transition. But I think family was the major reason. I was looking for a switch, you know, just to be home a little more often. As my kids are getting a little older, they're three, and the youngest will be one in September. So it's, as they start to get involved in more activities, you know, that's going to be important that I'm there, you know, during the summer nights. And so that was really the major factor when I made the switch.
I think a lot of these traditional media jobs, you know, it's very difficult to make it big, if you want to call it that, because there's all these different confluence of things and factors. How difficult is it as you know, working through the minor leagues to even be able to sustain a normal livelihood, either monetarily or otherwise?
It's very difficult. I mean, you don't get into broadcasting to make money, that's for sure. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, the major league broadcasters. Yeah, they're doing fine, but it's, I mean,
there's only 30 of them though.
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult to get that job. And I think you really have to balance, you know, what's important to you. Do you want to continue to try to reach that ultimate goal, or do you want to start raising a family? Because there's very few people out there that can really do both, unfortunately. And it's, right. It's not like, you know, in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, or even take Chicago. I mean, what are there in Chicago? 10 maybe baseball broadcasting jobs, you know, if you include independent leagues. And I mean, there's not a lot of opportunities. And so it's just, you know, you're likely going to have to make a move at some point if you want to continue to move up.
So how has the last few months been, you know, being out of the business now and being able to, you know, be home, you know,
it's been great. It's been terrific, you know, and I moved into a corporate communications role with Alliant Energy, where we serve customers in Cedar Rapids, really the entire state of Iowa and in Wisconsin. So it's been great. It's been allows me to be home more often. It's been extremely busy during the pandemic, as you can imagine, but it's been great. It's been a great fit for me. I'm able to do a lot of what I was doing at the Colonels as far as, you know, writing, you know, press releases, you know, statements, you know, a lot of external communication. So I'm able to do a lot of those things that I really enjoy, and it's been a terrific transition in more of that standard 8-to-5 job.
That's great. Mm-hmm. And then I'll get you out of here on this. I'm just curious. I don't know how much you've followed it at all, but you don't have to take the question literally to the Colonels, but are the Colonels and these similar teams, are they going to continue being teams, do you think, as baseball makes some changes and most likely changed forever because of this pandemic situation?
I know it's very interesting, you know, and it's a very good question, because you go back to January, February, and there were still so many unknowns before the pandemic. You know, there was the cut list of teams that were, you know, proposed to be cut at the end of the year. Teams like Burlington and even Quad Cities and Clinton, Iowa. Cedar Rapids was never necessarily, they weren't necessarily on that list, but have things changed? I don't know. You know, and it's, you know, when the entire minor league season was canceled, you just feel for minor league organizations all over the country, because that's how you make your money. And you make your money by playing baseball games. And when you don't play baseball games, you have to get really creative on how to make a little bit of money and how to save staff. And so it's going to be really interesting, number one, if we're able to finish the Major League Baseball season, which would certainly be in question a little bit, I would think, with the story of the Marlins. And we've only been a few days into the season. So I think you got to get through that, and then you've got to figure out, you know, what does baseball look like moving forward? Are we able next March and April to send players to, you know, teams all over the country to travel on buses and stay in hotels and play minor league baseball? I don't know. And nobody knows that answer right now, but I think we're all trying to figure it out.
All right, Morgan Hawk, it was good to hear your voice and good to hear that you're doing well and your family's doing well. And thanks for being on the podcast.
It was great to talk with you. Absolutely. And it was good to catch up. It was, I love reliving those memories from 2013. It's really fun to see all those players make the major leagues. And it was a really fun summer.
For Morgan Hawk, I'm Matt Cozy. This is Eavesdrop. See ya!